to the Movie Planet's bonus show. All of the bloopers, outtakes, and discussions that have nothing to do with the movie of the week, well, we decided, let's make a show of that too. Enjoy. Anything else you seen on here that you want to mess around with?
Have I not given scores to the Lords of the Rings?
You didn't give them because you said you needed to rewatch them.
I did last year.
Maybe that's when we did it.
Yeah.
Gosh. Well, you and I restarted doing this right before D&D.
Okay. I rewatched because I marathoned them.
Yeah.
At the Belcourt.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
Epic fantasy. There you are. Now, I'll say this. Again, these are only the ones that are in the theaters, not the extended editions.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it was The Hobbit, I will concede the extended editions would raise my grades probably a whole grade.
Okay. I've not done the extended on those.
The Hobbit is worth it.
Okay.
It makes so much more sense how it connects with Lord of the Rings now. But okay, Josh, you didn't give Lord of the Rings 1, 2, or 3.
Okay.
A grade.
Fellowship.
Fellowship. The Hobbits leave the Shire.
Fellowship. That movie's an A.
Yeah, it is.
That's a straight up A.
I'm loving it, like McDonald's.
Yeah.
Okay, The Two Towers. Gollum joins the party.
Two Towers. I also gave an A.
There we go. Yeah. Okay. And then the epic 45-minute ending, Return of the King, got 300s out of us.
Will Josh be a fourth?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh! Oh, and Joel remains the low man, keeping it from a perfect score for Return of the King. Oh, Joel, shame. That grade is a 99% now.
Yeah, that's... Those movies are miracles of filmmaking.
I saw one of the shows I subscribe to, Critical Drinker. He was talking about The Lord of the Rings,
mm-hmm.
and how movies today just aren't matching what we recaptured back then.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about the differences there, and that, you know, the if Lord of the Rings was made today, how many changes we made? And he goes, well, just look at The Hobbit. And the changes that were made there for the sake of agendas and all that stuff, as opposed to keeping Tolkien.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the characters that we have. And he mentioned, he's like, we are so fortunate, those of us that grew up in that time frame, the mm-hmm. 90s, when we sat there in the 90s going, where's our big event movie?
Right.
Because there were a bunch of individual great movies, but there was no big event franchise back then.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had to wait till the 2000s, and that's when we got The Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at it now, like, everything's a franchise now, which means nothing special.
Right.
But back then, that was special, and how cool that was, and how it just swept up all the awards. And that was for the 90s kids who didn't have their franchise in the 90s. And I was like, yeah, it's damn right it is. Damn right. That's my trilogy right there. I own that. Like, I feel like I own the trilogy. Like, that's me.
Yeah,
Lord of the Rings. It is as much a part of my fabric as the original trilogy of Star Wars.
I think for me, it was a long time coming back to it.
Yeah,
it was when I first saw them, I was like blown away, and then I had this like dead time in the middle where I was like, yeah, maybe I'm tired of fantasy. Maybe I don't like, you know, I. There was that cynical period, like in the middle, where I was like, hope.
Hope for dopes.
Yeah. But watching it especially in a theater full of people.
Oh, yeah.
Last year was like, I mean, multiple times there's tears.
Not a dry eye in the house.
Yeah.
No, I remember saying, that's one of those, I'll never forget theater experiences
mm-hmm.
in that. I remember the ending of Return of the King, and I was sitting there going, and I'm in tears, and I look at the time and I notice that there's still 30 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, what the hell Oh, and the next scene gets you.
Yeah.
And by the, I remember there were like 10 minutes left in the actual movie before the credits. And I'm like, I have nothing left emotionally at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing left liquid in my body to excrete out of my eyes. And I can't stop watching this. It is so good. And then when I rewatched, I watched the extended editions a year ago, or no, about 5 months ago. And it hit me again. And it's even longer now,
mm-hmm.
because it's an extended version. And it hits you again, and it hits you again. And that's the sound of a great movie, is that it doesn't hit you one time and you're good to go. And you see it again, you kind of laugh.
Right.
It gets you every time. And even more so, the special effects in 2000, 2001, and 2003 still hold up. They still look good.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in The Hobbit, they look like they're in that gray area of CGI.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's not quite where we're at now. It's not quite what it was then. Sadly, The Return of the King, The Fellowship, and The Two Towers are movies that will be timeless movies. And I feel like The Hobbits will be ones where people kind of go, and if you have time.
Yeah. The Hobbits are much more akin to the 70s, you know, Ralph Bakshi.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
oh, I saw the cartoon actually on Vudu. I was like, ooh, do I get it? I was like, oh, I'll like that more than the new ones. But I didn't realize this. The Lord of the Rings one that they did,
mm-hmm.
they only did the first two books.
Yes.
And they marketed it as one whole movie.
Yep.
No Return of the King.
Yeah, there is a guy on YouTube who did a cool breakdown,
okay.
of the rights issues and everything that went into that.
Yeah.
Into those choices.
I had a debate with Steve that I want to bring to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's that time of year. We're recording this December 29th, and I know this is coming out in January, but Die Hard.
Yeah.
Is it a Christmas movie?
Yeah, it is.
Not even hesitation.
No.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's
that's all I need to know.
How is it not a Christmas movie?
Well, my rationale behind why it's a Christmas movie is that it doesn't just take place during Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas is an integral part of the plot.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can take Christmas off of that, will it still function? Mm-hmm. If it can't function, then it's not a Christmas, or then it's a Christmas movie. If it still can function, it's not a Christmas movie anymore. It's just a movie that takes place around Christmas.
Hmm.
For instance, I used to say this about Home Alone, but I can't anymore because the guy steps on an ornament. You wouldn't hang ornaments up any time of the fucking year. But I'm trying to think of a movie that we were talking about that was like that. But I didn't have my debate hat on, mm-hmm. during the Christmas episode. And Steve painted me in a corner. He goes, oh, what if it was Valentine's Day? Would it still work then? And I'm like, why would he be flying across the country for Valentine's Day for a wife who doesn't want to be around him?
Right.
Well, what if it's a birthday, the kid's birthday? He's going to see the kids. I'm like, okay, sure. And I realized what he did. He just replaced the holiday with another holiday.
Yeah.
As opposed to replacing the holiday with nothing. I maintain Die Hard is a Christmas movie because you can't take it out of it. No one has a Thanksgiving party at the office.
Yeah.
No one has a Halloween party at the office.
That's fair.
They have Christmas parties at the office. And the only reason why Holly would be working late at that office is if there was a fucking Christmas party. That's why he had to divert his time to go there. Even the script has Holly calling home. Is Daddy coming home for Christmas?
Yeah.
And he's like, no, you could replace it with any holiday. I'm like, that's not the point.
So I will go.
Go further with it.
Yes, I'm going further with it because I think thematically, your family doesn't get together for Valentine's Day.
No.
Maybe Thanksgiving, but
not across the country like that.
Yes. So it's important in that way.
Yes.
I will also argue every time in favor, lack of a better term, of the vibes.
The spirit of Christmas is in this movie.
Yes. Much like so many Shane Black films.
Oh, right? Yes. Okay, so that was it. Lethal Weapon.
Yes.
Takes place at Christmas.
Yeah.
Not a Christmas movie.
Okay. It opens with a Christmas song.
It does. It does. It's a Wonderful Life is not a Christmas movie.
You can commit suicide anytime.
That movie came out in January, mm-hmm. long before Christmas, or long after Christmas was over with. This was mm-hmm. not meant to be a Christmas movie. And I go by what the writer's intentions were. The writer's intentions were never to make it a Christmas movie. It was, you know, it's a movie about redemption and understanding your own mortality and what you can do to change. The past isn't just set in the past. Mm-hmm. And I look at Lethal Weapon, movie with Christmas songs in it.
Mm-hmm.
Shane Black loves his Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
But do you need Christmas in that movie for it to function?
Okay, hang on. All right.
Don't get me wrong. I would love to have Lethal Weapon be considered a Christmas movie, but when it comes to Christmas time and they put movies in the theaters that you don't normally see in theaters, they don't put Lethal Weapon in there. They put Die Hard in there.
That's true. But to quote...
Go ahead.
To quote Cosmo Kramer from Seinfeld.
Welcome to Movie Phone.
Yes. My thought is all of these things add to the flavor of the film. Mm-hmm. It might not be integral to the plot, but it adds to the flavor and oftentimes the themes.
Okay.
And I think those are just as important as plot considerations, because we are watching films because they're these mediums that have, they can give you a complete meal.
Right.
It gives you all this stuff. Kramer says, or Costanza, George, says, why would I spend $7 to see a movie that I could watch on TV? Right? Kramer says, well, why go to a fine restaurant when you can just stick something in the microwave? Why go to the park and fly a kite when you can just pop a pill? Why, if you take these things out, mm-hmm. you're losing something essential from your viewing experience of the film that might have more to do than just the plot.
So, not that I don't agree with you, because I do agree with you.
Okay.
I like the idea that spirit should matter.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that spirit should trump its necessity in the plot.
Mm-hmm.
In that, I could see a movie being pushed to Christmas. Maybe it was set to be in June. They're mm-hmm. like, we're not going to, we're releasing it at Christmas time. Okay, cool. Hey, what if we were to put in the trailer this Christmas?
Mm-hmm.
And while they're watching the trailer, you hear some jingle bells in the background.
Okay.
Is it a Christmas movie now, or is that just the way that they're marketing it to you because it's at Christmas time?
Well, you need the content of the film to tell you.
Avatar.
You're not...
Avatar.
Did they...
The Way of Water.
Did they put Christmas bells on it?
They...
This Christmas, Avatar returns.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's a gift for all of us.
And it was.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
But is it a Christmas movie? Or is it a movie that just happens to be coming out at Christmas?
Well, I mean, you're talking about film world versus real world, and
okay, fair enough.
Yeah, for me, it doesn't matter when the movie comes out, because that's clearly a spring movie.
You
watch that movie and it feels like spring.
Well, Die Hard came out in June.
It doesn't feel like a June movie.
It feels like a Christmas movie.
There you go.
Do you know why?
Because it's a Christmas movie.
It takes place at fucking Christmas. Okay. Anything else here? Let's see. What else can we jabber about? Okay, I had an idea.
Uh-huh.
We're missing a lot of films and pantheons.
Yes.
And we just... It's such a pain in the ass to do a 2.5-hour show every single week to fill these out. So here's my concession as the gatekeeper of all this information.
Uh-huh. This is... Movie Planet is your planet, Joe.
It's kind of mine. I don't like saying that, but I do all the fucking work. So I was thinking,
uh-huh.
if there is a movie that you haven't seen that I've seen,
mm-hmm.
or that I've seen that you haven't seen.
I think it's the same thing.
Yeah. Okay. What if we were to give ourselves homework assignments?
Okay.
And report back on our grades for those movies.
Mm-hmm.
It can be, you know, a little write-up of what we think.
Mm-hmm.
And then those, boom, go in the pantheons. Because I can give my grade for whatever grade I give you.
Yeah.
And you can give your grade for whatever movie you give me.
Right.
So we can knock out two birds. Like, we can knock out the Westerns.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Like, I would try to give you a movie that I'm like, okay, I know it's not on here, but I want you to see this. Even if you have seen it, I want you to see it and yes. give your grade. And you give me one movie, you're like, Joe, there's nothing in the Western category. This is available on this medium.
Mm-hmm.
Check okay. it out. Give me your grade for next time.
Yeah.
Or sports, or make you watch Alien 3 again. Or... Oh, it sticks in my craw.
I love it.
I just love the fact that you gave it the same grade as Alien.
I love both those movies. So
And that's the other thing. When I was driving up to Michigan this time for, mm-hmm. for Christmas, I got to listen to our Alien retrospective.
Mm-hmm.
And the Alien 3 show was just me and Joel. And JC was supposed to be, JC got sick. So it was me and Joel talking about Alien 3. And I think Sam was there for a little bit. And the one thing we kept saying was, because I had Joel and JC over to watch Alien 3 for the first time. And they kept saying, watching JC on the couch during this movie, as he went through levels of confusion and discomfort, was half of the experience. Okay. And he said several times audibly, why are they doing this? What? This doesn't make sense. And I've maintained all along with Alien 3 that the behind the scenes featurette is better than the movie.
Okay.
Because you really get to learn how much a production company can fuck up a production.
Yeah.
By watching that. And even David Fincher coming out saying, I don't even recognize that movie. It's not one of mine.
Yes.
I don't know who that is. So yeah, it's at some point, maybe 5-10 years down the line when you start to change weird grades again. I'm trying to see stuff that you haven't graded on here.
There's not a lot that I haven't.
Like, you didn't do Newsies.
I haven't seen Newsies since I was a kid.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Let's see. What could I assign you here? I mean, first of all, would you be interested in that?
Yes.
Because we could really fill these out, and at least we're doing it with fidelity.
Also, get a letterbox or a spreadsheet and write your shit down. It helps.
Here's the problem with letterbox for me. Letterbox involves me going online, and then I'll get distracted doing other things.
Okay.
Because I've opened my letterbox like 3 or 4 times in the last month.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, I'm going to start logging movies. I'm like, I already do this on my spreadsheet.
And I think that's fine. I used to have a Moleskine.
What's notebook. That?
Like the little black leatherette notebooks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would have a new one every year.
Yeah.
I did that for like 4 or 5 years where I just wrote star ratings and maybe a couple words.
Yeah, like films. I'd like to get it. If there was a way for me to get everybody's grades on the letterbox
mm-hmm.
so they can see what everybody's individual grades were with that one movie without them having to create all their own little usernames and stuff, just right. one for the entire podcast, that would be ideal.
Yeah.
But when it's just one grade, you have no idea the nuance that went into it with everybody's grades and who gave what and why on earth is Alien 3 a C+ now as opposed to an F? What happened? You know,
right.
The mystery of Josh's 100 is not there anymore. I think I know what movie I'm going to assign you. I'm going to assign you Solo, a Star Wars Story.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
No. I want to assign you a good one.
Okay.
Unless I can't find one. Let's see.
I haven't seen The Eternals. Haven't seen Newsies.
Or we could just pick a movie that's a year old and be like, hey, let's just both do this one and see what we want to do. Just a short little write-up as opposed to a full show. Because the full shows we can reserve to, like, you know, movies that, like, we're excited about talking about, or they're fucking awful. It's like, let's rip this thing apart. Let's see here. Like, we got nothing in the documentary. Fight Club. You didn't give a grade for Fight Club.
It has been like 12 years since I've seen Fight Club. And I.
Well, Mr. Fuck You should probably re-see Fight Club as a well-adjusted adult now.
Yeah, I feel like I'm concerned about my previous enjoyment.
Do you feel like they do some emotional damage to you here?
Yeah, it's which I do think his new film is in conversation with his younger self.
What's his new film?
The Killer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I feel like he has evolved and matured as a filmmaker,
yeah,
and is kind of doing a Spielberg where he's commenting on the craft of director and storyteller.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So Fight Club's a possibility.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
National Treasure.
Not seen it.
Darby O'Gill and the Little People. Which is like one long stereotype against Irish people.
I'm pretty sure back in like the mid to late 80s, that was on like the Sunday evening.
Oh, I bet it was.
Yeah, like up there with Apple Dumpling Gang.
Yes.
Stuff like that.
That's another movie JC loves.
That
JC was the one that nominated Darby O'Gill. And the Banshee at the end still scares the hell out of him. He says that. Explains why he's here. Dungeon Master now. We haven't seen a Banshee.
Yeah.
Mobster movies. We don't have any of those. We've got Goodfellas and that's it.
Yeah, that's one that I was definitely looking at.
Godfather 1, 2, and 3. Yes, 3.
There you also have... Is there three different cuts of 3?
There are... there's the Coppola cut.
I think there's like a reconstruction.
Something like that.
There's the Coda is what they call one Coda. Of the... And then... Is like Mario Puzo's Godfather.
Isn't 3? Coda the one where they just put everything in chronological order, all the scenes?
No.
Which one was that?
Are you talking about the recut, the TV recut of 1 and 2?
Where they took 1, 2, and 3 and cut it so that all the flashback scenes in 2 were at the beginning,
mm-hmm,
and then rode that wave all the way through.
Yeah, that was like a...
That's just a made-for-TV thing?
Yeah, I think it was like a TBS or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, if we did the mobster, if we did those movies, I'd want to do just what was in the theaters. The theatrical cut, that's what we were given.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we want to go, look, this movie sucks, but if you want to see the real movie, check out this one or this one or this one or this one. The many different copies of Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Are there more versions of Apocalypse Now than there are of Blade Runner?
No. Nope.
How many versions of there's got to be more than 5 for Blade Runner, right?
I think there is 5. There's theatrical. There's work print.
Work print. That's the one I was forgetting.
Which is different.
Yeah.
There's
Final cut.
Final cut. But then like there's a director's that's different than the final, I believe.
That came out before.
Because yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was a 5th one. I know there's a 5th one because I used to have the
Is it just the theatrical then?
The DVD came in a suitcase.
Yeah.
Like the silver suitcase. Oh my
God, really?
DVD set. And I got that thing. I watched the hell out of that. I watched like all of them back to back, all the special features, like wow, one after another. It was intense.
Let's see. Never Been Kissed.
I haven't seen that one.
Oh. That's a... interesting movie. Yeah, it's so funny listening to the Alien podcasts and how excited we were because when we Covenant, we did all those before Covenant came out.
Okay.
And how psyched we were for Covenant. And then when we did Covenant, we were like, this is great. We're hearing that Ridley Scott wants to make the one that's in the middle between Prometheus and Covenant now,
mm-hmm,
which is a weird thing to do, but if you want to Dark Knight yourself, you can. But then we got news about the Alien TV show that we're seeing coming to Hulu.
Yeah.
Our boy Timothy Oliphant's in it. Do you know anything about this?
No.
Like, is this like the Predator Hulu thing where they were like, we won't tell anybody until it shows up, and then we're like, ah, look what we were working on.
Yeah. And you know my feelings of like different filmmakers, different storytellers tackling something in the same universe doesn't have to have the same tone, and they can kind of go squirrely and do their own thing.
So, if it's established early, I agree.
So with that, I'm excited for what they bring to it. And I can't remember, is it Noah Hawley?
That's doing the directing it?
Maybe show running it, the creator of Fargo, the show Fargo.
Oh yeah, yeah. Alien and S.E. Davis. Okay, so we know about this. Timothy Oliphant, S.E. Davis, Alex Lawther, Sidney Chandler. I don't know who these people are.
Yeah, written and directed by Noah Hawley.
Okay. Okay. You know what? I've never seen a single episode of Fargo.
Holy shit. That show.
Look, I'm on House right now.
That's fair.
And to be fair, it wasn't like I wasn't watching anything when that show comes out. There's always something else I'm watching. I remember when people were asking me about Dawson's Creek. Did you ever watch Dawson's Creek when you were a kid? No. Why not? Smallville's on.
Huh.
Yeah. Or Buffy and on. Buffy. I watched Buffy. I'm done. I'm done with the CW now. I go home.
See, I watched X-Files and Dawson's Creek.
Okay. So X-Files.
Mm-hmm.
What have you thought of the movies that they've made?
I like the second one a lot more, I think, in retrospect. The first one, when they gave it to me,
yeah.
I was like, nom, 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 nom.
Right.
Let me eat it up because I want more time with my friends on a bigger scale.
Yes.
But I felt like it's kind of inert.
Okay.
Yeah.
It'd be like doing a CSI on the big screen. You're like, yep, that's
yeah,
them.
Yeah. Whereas the second one, it's like you get to go back to it. And it's like you get to revisit and after some time away.
I did like the second one. Mm-hmm. And I actually liked the revival that they did, mm-hmm. that one season they did. I thought that was a really cool thing.
Yeah.
It's a shame that more people didn't watch it. But I don't know. I could watch Gillian Anderson do anything at this point.
Have you seen any of her other shows? Have you seen
American Sex? God, she's awesome on that.
Have you seen Sex Education?
That's on Netflix, right?
Maybe. I don't know. Elizabeth watches it. I wake up and she's watching it, or I go to bed after doing the dishes and she's watching it.
Like, I loved her on The Crown as Queen Elizabeth. She was great as that. She was Margaret Thatcher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so good. She's aged into more roles, which never happens.
Oh yeah.
Like, she Maggie Smithed.
Yeah.
Okay. Saltburn. Let's talk Saltburn.
I have not watched it.
Oh, you haven't?
No. I'm scared of Saltburn.
Josh.
It grosses me out already.
Here's what I'm scared of.
Mm-hmm.
I'm scared you'll see this and say it's amazing.
Okay. Argument to the contrary, I think Emerald Fennell is a stupid name and they should get a real name.
It is a stupid name.
Yeah.
I liked Promising Young Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I read a short synopsis of this because I felt it would be too artsy for me to get the first time around.
Yeah.
And I read it. I was like, okay, sounds weird. And you ever like know you're going into like a situation where you're going to be uncomfortable and your brain prepares you for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you get there. And you realize that there's nothing that your brain has to prepare you for this level of uncomfortable.
Okay.
Like, have you ever been in that situation?
In real life? Or
yes, in real life.
Like walking into a movie.
In real life.
Yeah.
This is that.
Okay.
Where you'll read and go, okay, there's some stuff going on. Got it. And when you watch, you go, I knew this was going to happen. I don't like this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like this at all. the final scene, I don't need to see that much ding dong.
Okay.
But at the same time, I get it. Everybody thinks rich people are weird.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's a tired thing. I know a lot of really wealthy people. They don't all have weird proclivities.
They're not all a bunch of freakish perverts.
They're not all eyes wide shutting in their basements. Okay. They're not. Most of them are very normal people.
Yeah.
But the whole thing that Hollywood has of, well, they're rich, so let's make them weird. Oh God, come on. That being said, these people are fucking weird. I saw Aquaman
mm-hmm.
the other day. The end of the DCEU.
Yes.
This is the final movie, right? I think it is. It's the final movie of the DCEU, and it went out with a whimper. Went out with a whimper.
Not that I've had high hopes for anything in that universe for a while, mm-hmm. But I kind of did. Like, it seemed like it might have some verve to it.
You know, the other show I listened to, because I listened to several because it's a 9-hour drive,
mm-hmm.
was our Green Lantern show.
Okay.
Green Lantern was supposed to be the first movie of that entire universe.
Okay.
The Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Which came out a year after Iron Man.
God, were we ever so young?
I know. But Green Lantern was supposed to be it. And when it didn't work, they were like, okay, let's pivot. Let's go dark.
Mm-hmm.
They did Man of Steel. And Man of Steel gets shit from everybody. I love Man of Steel. Man of Steel is my second favorite Superman movie of all time.
Okay.
Yeah. But people hate it because, well, Superman kills somebody in it. And he has this fight in Metropolis that just levels buildings. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's his first time being Superman. In the second movie, they take the fight away from the city.
Right.
Mistakes were made.
Lessons were learned.
But I also, listening to that, at the beginning of those shows from before, I used to play the theme song of the movie.
Okay.
You know, before I cared about copyright. And that John Williams score is so solid for Superman.
Uh-huh.
It is so solid. And even more so, it's not my favorite version of the score. My favorite version of that score is John Ott's for Superman Returns, where he took the John Williams song
mm-hmm.
and re-recorded it with some more flourishes in it.
Nice.
And to this day, when I hear the Superman score, I don't hear Christopher Reeve. I don't think of anybody else except for Brandon Routh.
Oh, wow.
Like, he's who I signed it, because that opening, the opening they did for Superman Returns with the music is bananas. Because if you remember the Superman, the movie, which we're going to do in a couple of weeks, me and Steve are going to do that. It's just their names. In this, you're following a ship through space around all these different planetary objects in Superman Returns.
Yep.
And all the bombastic beats hit another planet at a different place.
Yes.
And like, I just got goosebumps just thinking about it. Holy shit. But it's one of those things where I'm like, people go, oh, you know, what's your favorite Superman song? What, John Ott's Superman. Who's he? Well, he took John Williams and stuff and made it cooler.
That's a bold statement.
I said it. But yeah, John Williams, that's another guy. John Williams, Jesus Christ. When's he going to die? Has he died?
I don't believe he's died, but...
let me see what he's working on at 900 years old.
I was going to say, what is the most recent thing that he's done?
Well, I know he scored all the Star Warses, because they needed him for that to make, well, less memorable tunes. There's nothing memorable about those last movies. There's one, I'm sorry. I always say there's a kernel of good. I love Ray's theme.
Oh, okay.
That doo-doo-doo, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. I love that theme so much. I could hear that on a loop and be fine. Okay, credits.
I did Dial of Destiny.
Oh, fuck me. That's what he went out on?
But he did Fablemans as well. Like, just, you know.
Yeah, but no one saw it.
Hey.
He did the making of Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
Yeah.
Fablemans. Yeah, it doesn't say he's working on anything right now. It's probably a good thing. I think, how old is John Williams?
He was born in 1932.
John Williams is old. Just old, old balls, old. 1952?
32.
Oh, that's years active is 52.
Yeah.
32. So it's late. I can't do math. There's a calculator here. 2023 minus two. No.
No.
1952. 71. He's older than that. That's 1952.
That's
1932.
Not, math doesn't math.
Nope. 91. He's 91 years young.
Wow.
And we will always remember him for E.T.
And his contribution to The Book Thief. What?
Yes. Other notable scores that he's done that no one's seen. The Paper Chase.
I think I liked The Paper Chase when I was a teenager.
He was an uncredited conductor at that point.
Okay.
Jaws 2, 1941.
I mean, it's
Spielberg.
So my friend Andrew, huge Spielberg guy.
Okay.
Massive Spielberg guy.
Bigger than you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, like sickening.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah, like it's bad. But he actually rates 1941 fairly high.
Yeah, it's a shit show.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know how.
You know what you just found? You just found your Alien 3.
Mm.
There you go. Okay, here's the best credit here. John Williams is credited for Jaws 3D.
Mm-hmm.
It's his composer, shark theme. That's it. Space Camp.
I remember Space Camp.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
He did?
It says composer.
Okay.
Maybe because there was some themes from John Williams that they did in that. Oh, they use the Star Wars theme when they're cruising over the car.
Okay.
That's why. Witches of Eastwick. Love that movie.
He did a Hitchcock.
Oh.
Family Plot, 1976.
Nobody knows that he wrote Home Alone.
What? Who doesn't?
I heard somebody say that Carol of the Bells was written by John Williams. And I'm like, what? They're like, yeah, it was in Home Alone. I'm like, you know, Carol of the Bells was written like a century ago. And although he's 91, he's not there yet.
Yeah. He wasn't composing straight out the womb.
No. Gosh, this guy just cranked stuff out. But not nearly as much as I thought that I would recognize. Like, I recognize all the big ones,
mm-hmm.
but because they're all franchises, they're just in more movies. That's why I remember them.
Right.
But, like, if you told me to hum Angela's Ashes, I'd be like, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Or The Patriot?
But you remember these movies.
I remember the movies, yes, okay. But I can't hear the songs in my head.
Yeah.
Or AI. I love AI.
Yes.
I
can't tell you the main theme from Minority Report.
No. Catch Me If You Can is a good one, though. I can remember that one.
Yep. Stepmom.
Who was in Stepmom?
Stepmom is Julia Roberts.
Oh, okay, okay.
Julia Roberts, Susan Sarandon.
Let's see. I think he just got Spielberg's name on, like, speed dial.
Yeah. But also Chris Columbus.
Yeah, Harry Potter. I just went through all the Harry Potters there.
Yep.
Okay, my question to you now.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Giacchino has tried desperately to be the next John Williams.
Yes.
Will he get there?
I mean, I don't think that the monoculture is as... It's not what it used to be, right? Like,
yeah.
Everyone sees all kinds of different things. You don't all line up and you don't all hum the Star Wars theme.
Right.
He has not written something that indelible, even though I really like a lot of his work.
I found a problem with him because I used to swear by him, and I found a thematic problem when I heard the Star Trek theme that he did.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard the Spider-Man theme that he did.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard the Doctor Strange theme that he did. And they're all the same.
That's never stopped John Williams.
Well, I don't mean the same as in he's using the same instruments and the same, you know, melodic flourishes here and there that mm-hmm. John Williams we know of. John Williams, we know he loves big brass and he loves strings to play 1,000 notes a minute every chance they can get, even when you barely hear it.
Right.
He tortures strings instruments. Michael Giacchino, I think, is creatively bankrupt. That he's gotten away with murder now with Star Trek and Spider-Man and Doctor Strange. And when I heard it the first time, I was like, gosh, this sounds really good. I love the Star Trek theme. This new Star Trek, I love it. Da, 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 da. And then I heard the Spider-Man, I was like, da, 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 da. I was like, the fuck? Then it was Doctor Strange. And it was the same thing. And I went, I've been protecting this guy like the devil on high. And I remember when he got the job, he was the original guy that they got for Force Awakens.
Okay.
And when J.J. Abrams, because J.J. and Michael Giacchino, they're buddies.
Yeah.
So he called Giacchino and the studio said, you know, we can get you John Williams. And J.J.'s like, well, he'll never come back. You know? And
yeah.
They said, well, make the call. So they can make the call. John Williams says, yeah, sure, it's Star Wars. I'll do it. Calls up Michael and goes, I'm sorry, buddy. John Williams is taking the job. He goes, that makes sense.
That's fine.
That's fine. So what he does, he gets Michael Giacchino a bit part in the movie.
Oh, okay.
Michael Giacchino is one of the stormtroopers who throws Poe down in front of Kylo Ren at the beginning of the movie.
Okay.
And that's where Michael Giacchino is. Much like Daniel Craig is the one who is the stormtrooper that's got Rey locked up.
I mean, it's weird looking at Giacchino's, which sounds like a Starbucks order.
Yes.
I mean, he did all these Jurassics, right? your Jurassic Worlds is.
Yeah.
Your Missions Impossible.
That's the thing is.
Star Trek. He moved these things that had iconic scores into a generic place.
That's actually it. He's piggybacking off of John Williams.
Mm-hmm. Planet of the Apes.
He did The Batman.
Yeah.
Well, The Batman is just Hans Zimmer.
Yes.
Creatively bankrupt. maybe that's what we should do is The Batman's.
The Batman?
The Batman's. Starting with Keaton. No. 66. Oh.
You mean the same plot as Dark Knight Rises? Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
I have the entire TV series on my Vudu.
Oh, do you?
Oh, yeah. And I watch them every now and then. It'd be like, okay, let me watch this. And I'm like, God, this is just so wholesome. Just like every time Robin sees something, like Adam West is teaching him a lesson, like, that's right, Robin. That's why it's good to come home straight from school, right, to get your homework done, and then make sure you get a good glass of milk. Criminals don't know that. And then they leave the room. And you're like, thanks for the PSA. But it happens in every episode. It was the original G.I. Joe ending.
Uh-huh.
It was the original one. Zootopia, Tomorrowland. Just a series of forgettable soundtracks and ones he piggybacked off of.
Sky High, I think, is somewhere in the mix.
Love Sky High. That's a... Sky High is a great movie.
Is Sky High is like, is that 2005, 2006, somewhere in that era?
It sounds like it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Sky High might be one I want to nominate for the family film genre.
Ooh.
Good movie to watch with the family. That, oh. Sky High is one of those movies where it's like, when they tell us that we can watch a movie at work in the event that we ever can, I'm like, okay, kids, we're watching Sky High. Sidekick!